are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to a Tuesday edition of Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I'm joined, as always, by David Ramil, and not as always, in fact, for the first time ever with us, second time with the Locked On NBA show, it's Sports Illustrated's Ben Golliver. Ben, how you doing?
I'm doing great, gentlemen. Thanks so much for having me. Pretty wild night for our first episode together. Huh? I mean, Klay Thompson setting records. There's a bunch of good games. It was pretty great.
Klay knew about it, and so he was like, I got to give them something great to talk about. So we appreciate that, as always, from Klay Thompson, who also wore the headband in our honor as well. I'm actually wearing a headband right now in Klay's honor, so it makes sense. We've got a lot to get to today, including Rick Pitino trying to weasel his way back into the NBA, and we're debuting a new segment about breakfast food. But let's start in Chicago, where Klay Thompson picked one hell of a way to end his shooting slump, breaking the single-game record of 13 three-pointers in a game that was set by his fellow Splash Brothers, Steph Curry. He made 10 in the first half, then drained four more in the third quarter to break the record as the Warriors torched the Bulls 149-124. Kind of surprised they didn't break 200. Going into the game, Klay made just 5 of his 36 three-point attempts, but you had to know that he was due for a game like this, right, Ben?
Well, these guys remind me of the Cub Scouts with the merit badges. It's like they go out there every single night trying to get some accomplishment that nobody else has ever done, and they try to spread it around. They're very, egalitarian that way. It's like, okay, Steph, you've got 13. Now, Klay, you get 14. And they'll just keep changing these records as they go. I mean, to me, it wasn't just about Klay tonight. It was about the full force and fury of their offense. 92 points in the first half. Are you kidding me? I mean, it's the second most all time in terms of first half points. The last time it was some gimmick game, in the early 90s where they, the final score wound up being in the 170s. So this was just an unbelievable scoring explosion. Klay started the season slow, and I think if you were worried about that, you're an idiot, because Klay does not stay slow or stay slumping for too long. I mean, we have seen some droughts, in the playoffs a couple years back, and we probably went cold for 3 or 4 weeks straight there. But this guy is, one of the top, 3, 4, 5 shooters of all time, and you knew he was going to get out of it. You just didn't know he was going to do it quite like this.
Who gets the merit badge for walking Andre Iguodala across the street? That's what I want to know.
Oh, we're going to push him in a wheelchair. I see how you guys are, getting the digs in. Well, look, laugh now, because come June, I mean, doesn't this team have the feel of a roster that wants to go 16-0 in the playoffs, to really make some crazy history? Because they're not using the same excuses as last year. Remember, they were whining about China, going to China during the preseason for like 3 straight months. It seems like all the excuses are out of the way this year. And it's just sort of like, okay, Steph, you go off. KD, you go off. Klay, you go off. We're going to play enough defense so that our offense can just, overpower teams on a night to night basis. And, to me, I think they're back in 2016 mode as a team, pre-Durant, where they score so easily, they demoralize their opponents. They can just mess around on the court, and if they want to chase a record for Klay and put their full attention on doing that, nobody's going to stop them.
So if last season's struggle was them trying to find something to motivate themselves by, is it just trying to outdo one another then? Is it a friendly competition amongst each other on the roster there to try and find a new record to break?
This is a crazy theory. I have 2 theories. Number one is they could just be viewing this as like the last run with KD, so let's go out with a huge bang. I mean, that is definitely possible. My other theory and preferred theory, though, is they just got bored of being bored. It's sort of like, well, that really wasn't that fun last year when we were dragging and whining and nobody was playing that hard. And it's like now they've got Steph healthy, which was a big issue that, people kind of skipped over last year. He missed a big chunk of the season. And when he's not out there, they're a lot less fun, and they're also a lot less motivated as a team. Yeah. The fact that he's been off to such a sensational start, I mean, he's probably the MVP leader. If he's not, he's right there with Giannis and AD. I think that's a big, factor in their boost as well.
The narrative for Steph is coming clear right now. And look, this is the best start the Warriors have had since that 24 straight wins to kick off that 73 win season. So I'm with you. I think this is probably the best version of this of the Warriors since that team. Kevin Durant is fully folded in now, I think. It doesn't feel like they're doing the force feeding of everything. In fact, like you said, Ben, they're kind of just figuring out ways to have fun. Like, how do you have fun when you're playing the Chicago Bulls in the middle of the week, you know, the first 10 games of the season? You just, Klay Thompson goes off in the first half, and you're like, you know what, let's see how many more he can get. Let's see if he could break that record by the end of the third quarter. And so every time down the court, it was obvious that they were going to throw it to Klay Thompson, and that Klay Thompson was going to step back and shoot a three-pointer. And the Bulls couldn't stop it, mostly because they're the Bulls, but also because nobody could stop the Warriors anyway. They're just that dominant. It's crazy what they might be able to do. And I'm out, and David knows this, but Ben, I'm up here in Oakland, and so I'm around the Warriors at practice and a few of these games and stuff, and it's very obvious that there is a message in that team right now that says, you know what, just enjoy it, go out there, throw the ball out there, play pickup style basketball. Because last year the message was, look, it's hard to repeat. You've got to do the dirty details. You've got to rebound. You got to play great defense, and that's the only way we're going to repeat. And the truth was, that's not true. They were just going to repeat basically if they put out 80% effort, because they're just that dominant at this point. And so I think they kind of realized that, and they're basically like, let's just go have fun, because at the end of the day, we're talented enough, and we've got the structure and the organizational strength to just get to where we need to be. I think they're just there right now. I just don't think there's nobody else on their level.
Yeah, you go back to 2015. The only team that's really beaten the Warriors is the Warriors themselves. I mean, I would say that for the 2016 finals with Draymond and, you know, his suspension grabbing incident there. I would say that they were beating themselves largely in the Western Conference Finals, too. I mean, Oklahoma City had a great series, but Draymond was just god-awful in that series. And, you know, Steph and Klay, it took a little while for them to really get going. You know, you zoom ahead to last year's Western Conference Finals. I mean, you were mentioning, you know, some of the, you know, the push me, pull you stuff on offense where it's grinding down a little bit. I mean, those complaints really arise when KD's only shooting like 35 or 40%. As long as KD is hitting his shots, it's really hard for them to beat themselves because everybody else in that squad has played so well together for so long at this point. And, you know, basically the injuries almost undid them last year, too. But, you know, they haven't had any major health issues really this season. So I think that we're basically looking at this, you know, fourth or fifth year here where the only team that can beat Golden State is Golden State. And like I said, they seem to have a much better mental approach this year, which is, you know, they're sick and tired of being sick and tired, and they're ready to smack everybody. And they're realizing that that's more fun than kind of grinding out these ugly games like they got stuck in last year.
So now Curry has, or Klay Thompson has the record for 3-pointers made in a game with 14. Previously, it was Steph Curry at 13, and previously before that, it was Steph Curry at 12. So now the Splash Brothers have three of the best 3-point shooting games in NBA history. David, when will Steph Curry break Klay Thompson's record that Klay Thompson broke?
I don't think he'll do it this year. I mean, it's not like for lack of trying. I think he's certainly going to give it his best attempt at some point, and maybe he'll fall short. I think it's incredibly hard. We kind of tend to overlook or assume that these accomplishments are easy because they keep setting these new records and breaking them from one another. But at the same time, I just don't see Curry going off for, you know, more 3-pointers than Klay did tonight. Maybe that's naive of me, and maybe he'll be able to do it. I just don't see that as a realistic possibility, because at some point they'll have to focus on maybe they'll get another easy opponent. Maybe they'll, like so many other teams this year, maybe they'll go into Phoenix and use that as an opportunity to test some new move that they haven't incorporated into the on-court play yet, go off for 16 3-pointers. It's certainly a possibility, but I just don't see it happening from Curry this year.
Well, one thing I'd say is they have warped the idea of sportsmanship here over the last couple of years, because if you go back in a time machine to like 2012, if you had a lead of like 20 points and you still had your guys out the court, that would be considered almost like insulting. But the three pointer has just taken off so far, not just them, but, you know, the rest of the league too, where like you can easily blow a 15 or 20 point lead in a game now, where you're now allowed to play your guys when you're up 40 points in the first half against the Chicago Bulls. I mean, that was part of the reason why they were even able to get this record, is because they got out to such a big lead so early that they could kind of screw around and chase it. I wouldn't be surprised at all if one of these guys takes this record even higher within the next couple of years. And I say that because, you know, Steph's 12 came in a very close game against the Oklahoma City Thunder back in 2016. I feel like if they get into one of these like patented shootouts with another team that's a super, you know, high octane, up and down, high paced game whether it's like, let's say, New Orleans. You know, I could envision the Lakers. They probably can't hang, you know, in terms of efficiency.
Sacramento,
they do play that up and
maybe.
Down style. Yeah, the Kings out of nowhere playing the super fast style. Milwaukee is like totally playing, you know, the pace and space stuff right now and getting up lots and lots of 3-point attempts. We just need somebody to hang close enough where Kerr can't, you know, can justify to himself continuing to run up the score. And then the Warriors could really break some records. Because honestly, think about it. If the Bulls weren't so pathetic, you score 92 points in the first half. How many points could you score in a game if you didn't call off the dogs? Like, they called the dogs off completely and got 149. Could they have had 170, 165? I mean, like, where is that line if somebody actually pushed them? And, you know, it's a big story at the start of the season, pace and efficiency and 3-point attempts all being up yet again. And, you know, Golden State, you know, they've always got the ace up their sleeves on those categories.
And I'm sure the Bulls fans, didn't even mind this, too. Like, to your point about, you know, what sportsmanship is like, they're seeing their team, theoretically, the team that they root for most, get blown out there. And they're loving every second of it because it's this incredible display of talent.
Yeah, you can't hate him. I think just to think about how many 3-pointers Klay Thompson could have had if they wouldn't have taken him out after he got the 14th one and broke Curry's record. I mean, 20? I don't know. Like, it could have been anything. They took him out. There's 4 minutes left in the third quarter when Klay subbed out. Let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about that Lakers-Timberwolves game and then go into an early season coaching carousel news. But before we go, David has the other scores from Tuesday night's games.
Yep, Portland and Indiana. Portland wins that 103-93, 21 points from Victor Oladipo in a losing effort. Philadelphia 113 over Atlanta, 92 points. Sacramento blowing out with that fast pace, 123 over Miami with 113. The Knicks over Brooklyn, a game no one cares about. Golden State, of course, 149 over Chicago, 124. Milwaukee 124 over Toronto, 109 in a game where neither superstar Giannis Antetokounmpo or Kawhi Leonard played. And then, of course, San Antonio 113 over Dallas in overtime. And that's about it.
We'll be right back after this break. You know, ever since launching the podcast, people have been asking me for advice, and usually it's what team to bet on this week. And the truth is, I don't know who's going to win, but if you think that you know, you've got to check out MyBookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. That's why I always tell people to bet with MyBookie. Trust me, guys, they are the best bet this season. They've been in business for years. They have great reviews online. Their mobile site is easy to use. Lay down some cash and win big today. I'd only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me. That's why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business, and for you fantasy guys out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use the promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON when creating your account to claim that bonus and let them know that you came from us. You play, you win, you get paid. We'll take a look at tonight's games in a new segment later on called Serial or Not Serial. Trust me, it'll make more sense when we get there. But let's get to this Lakers game because what was the final score here? I already lost it. They lost 124-120 to the Timberwolves. They had it there late in the game, Ben. They had it to within 2 points with, I think, 30 seconds left. A couple of missed. There was a turnover there by LeBron, a backcourt violation. There was Jimmy Butler just taking over the game. The Lakers, this is not the first time that they've lost a close game, right, at the end of a game. You're around the Lakers right now. Are you concerned at all with how they're losing these games? Because it's not even the young guys that are causing it. I mean, Rondo's made mistakes. LeBron's made mistakes. Are you concerned?
I'm not concerned. I think big picture, when you have this many new parts and this many guys, I mean, LeBron's never played with any of these guys before. And so many of these guys had question marks about what kind of players they would even be in this roster. I think, you know, even though LA's record is what it is, I think 2-5 now, to me, they have succeeded on the most important early season, checklist item, which is establishing an identity. I mean, they get to their pace basically every single game. They put up points basically every single game. LeBron is adjusting and sticking to the game plan of, you know, pushing the ball up and down and, you know, not trying to revert to maybe his preferences at times to, you know, go down in the post or pound a little bit more off and not move the ball. And so I think from that standpoint, like, if you're Luke Walton, you're okay with where the record is. because the schedule has been pretty tough and because you do have that identity issue. But my biggest takeaway from this game is I was a little frustrated, guys, because I was all prepared to come on here and make the world debut of my favorite new nickname, which is Carl Anthony Bennett for Carl Anthony Towns, because this guy has been checked out for like the last 2 weeks straight. The only time he plays hard is when Jimmy doesn't play. But for the first time, basically all season, Towns and Butler both played very well in the same game. I think they combined for like 57 points. You know, Towns was really having a lot of success on the glass, too. And to me, his motor has been kind of an issue, you know, throughout the season, really. And so to see Jimmy bring it home with the three-pointer, like you mentioned, to see them have a pretty cohesive effort, you know, from their main guys, and to really get their offense rolling, I thought, you know, ultimately this was a much-needed game for Minnesota after some really ugly showings recently.
Six assists from Towns, four blocks, really dominated the paint. David, from Carl Anthony Towns and Jimmy Butler being able to combine for that kind of, for a dominating game, really. They didn't get a whole lot from the other guys. Anthony Tolliver hit a couple threes. There's a couple guys there that Derrick Rose had his, you know, 10 to 11 points off the bench as he's kind of used to having at this point this season. But Carl Anthony Towns, Jimmy Butler, has this sold you that maybe there's bridging the gap there a little bit?
No, not at all. I mean, it's so funny. In the post-game interview, they were asking Jimmy Butler about his ability, exactly what you just asked, whether or not now they can finally start to find a way to coexist. And he's answering, like, I hope so. Like, he's not completely responsible for emasculating Carl Anthony Towns in the early part of the season and eroding what little confidence he has. So, I mean, I just don't see it. I mean, it's a big game for Carl Anthony Towns. That's great. I mean, does he remember now that he can suddenly play at a high level and it doesn't matter whether he's sharing the floor with Jimmy or not? What was the problem over the first few weeks of the season to keep him from remembering that? So, I mean, they'll have another bit of tension at some point. I think it just feels inevitable. Yeah. And if not, we can always trust Minnesota's dysfunctional front office to make a trade now when things are finally starting to look like they're improving.
I think part of it, too, is that the Lakers were basically without a real center to compete against Towns. I mean, JaVale McGee had a really inefficient 31 minutes. And so I think Towns was able to just dominate in the paint, which he did. I mean, he was the biggest guy in the paint. He just looked like a big kid in kindergarten school.
Which is funny because in my interview I did with Luke Walton before the season for the Sports Illustrated preview issue, I asked him, like, how often are you going to go small? And he says, well, look, we're not going to play LeBron at center against Carl Anthony Towns. It's like, well, you know, but in terms of the concerns from the Lakers side that you mentioned, they've had to juggle the starting lineup a lot, and they've basically had to change everybody's role, right? Like, mm-hmm. Caldwell Pope had his role changed. Josh Hart went from bench to starter to bench. Lonzo started on the bench. Now he's a starter. Rondo started as a starter. Now he's on the bench. Kuzma started on the bench. Now he's a starter. I mean, you get my drift here. Because of the suspensions, it's really forced them to juggle a lot of things. I think if there's a positive takeaway for LA, it's that you were able to get pretty good offensive nights from Kuzma, LeBron, and Ingram, mm-hmm. all in the starting lineup together, which is, you know, not something you would necessarily predict. You would think that, you know, something would have to kind of give there. But I do think Luke needs to completely kind of work through these rotations now that everybody's back from the suspension and really hone in on, like, which guys are the right partners for each other. I'm actually curious what you guys think about trying to start Kuzma and Ingram together. To me, that feels a little weird on paper. I still kind of like Kuzma in that super sixth man role, and I think, you know, Ingram actually might have more time to shine if he played off the bench, but I think that's kind of a tough sell given, you know, they view him as sort of this rising star, you know, within their organization. How would you guys handle that issue there?
I mean, I liked how I liked bringing Brandon Ingram in from that suspension, starting him at basically the two guard. I'm with you. It seemed a little weird with Ingram and Kuzma in there because one of them basically has to be the other scorer next to LeBron. And it's tough when they're both in there. Kuzma coming off the bench not only provides more size coming off the bench, but, you know, you could play LeBron at that Kuzma spot at the four next to JaVale. You could play Ingram, and then that way you kind of move Josh Hart in, who doesn't necessarily need the ball to be impactful. And I love what they were getting out of Josh Hart when he was the starter when Ingram was suspended. So, yeah, I think you got to keep bringing Kuzma off the bench. But they're, in general, they do this thing. Like, I kind of liken them to a hockey team where they're just subbing in guys all the time. And sometimes they even pull the goalie and play without a true center in there. And I just, I don't know how much it matters who starts, but I think it's going to be that five-man combination that they're trying to figure out. We saw a bunch of times where we saw a couple of minutes here and there where they, I guess these rotations overlap and Rondo, Lonzo Ball, and LeBron James are all on the floor at the same time together, and that doesn't make any sense to me. Just as much as having Kuzma, LeBron, and Ingram on the floor doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So I think I don't know if the rotations are just getting kind of overlapped or something, but Walton is clearly making adjustments game to game because we tend to be seeing new lineups out there every game, which is crazy, and which is why the Lakers have been so much fun, quite frankly, so far this season. I don't know what you think about it, David.
No, I agree with you. And for the most part, I think Kuzma's better off the bench at this point. And let's see if he can embrace that role and find a way to thrive in it, because he has not done so far this year.
Now, the point you made about the short rotations is totally right, because some of these guys just can't play that long at that speed without getting winded. Like McGee is a great example. I mean, he's definitely had some issues like keeping up, even though he's very athletic and pretty slender. I mean, that's how fast they're playing. And I think that's a real test for this group. Like, is this a regular season gimmick? You know, will they be able to do these crazy kind of rotation patterns in a playoff series when certain guys are going to get picked on, you know, by the smarter teams? I mean, I think that's a real open question. And obviously when the team's 2-5, it's probably an open question right now here, you know, coming up in October and November too, right? I mean, is it really working? Is it not? But I do think sort of long-term big picture for the Lakers, they're being very unusual with how they're approaching style of play this year. And frankly, I love it. It makes every single game that I go to so much fun to watch, but ultimately has to translate into wins. And we'll see if they can kind of stack those up as their schedule gets a little bit easier here going forward.
Let's take a look at some coaching news, including where the Cavs go from here after firing Tyronn Lue. We'll do that after this quick break. So Tyronn Lue was fired by the Cavs over the weekend, in part because of the 0-6 start and because he was reluctant to hand the reins over to the young players on the roster, as requested by management. Now assistant Larry Drew takes over in a brand new job that's never existed before, called the voice of the coach, which is just an apparition. He doesn't even go on the sideline. He just like goes into the stands with a megaphone and yells at players. But we have no idea who the next actual coach will be. So let's play a game of true or false, Ben. Are the Cavs ready to blow it up?
I mean, true. They already blew it up, I think. I mean, once LeBron went out the door, it blew up, whether they wanted to admit it or not. Now, I guess if you're saying, are they ready to trade a Kevin Love here by the deadline? I think that's a different question. And I can kind of see the argument both ways for them. But can we give a real shout out to Larry Drew here? What a flex. Yeah. Like, how have we ever seen this before where a guy's like, yeah, you know, I'm going to really draw out the negotiation on what I'm going to be able to make as an interim coach, given that we're just 6 games in and he's got to coach 76 games left down the stretch. I mean, you know, truly impressive work by both him and his agent. And it does seem like they caught the, you know, Cavaliers, you know, front office and ownership group that obviously was acting impulsively, you know, with this firing, caught them a little bit flat footed. But, you know, in terms of big picture for Cleveland, they've got to blow it up. I mean, to me, you can hold on to Love and still blow it up because that's how bad the rest of their roster is. I think if I were them, I'd be trying to shop everyone for spare parts. Like, I'd be calling Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka every single day and say, you know, you really need to reunite Kyle Korver with LeBron. That was a pretty devastating combination for us in Cleveland. I'd be trying to, sell off anyone else they possibly can. The problem is they don't have a lot of talent there. Yeah. And there was supposedly this rift of like, oh, are they playing the young guys enough or not? Their young guys aren't very good. That's a big issue too. Like Colin Sexton can't play yet. Like it's not Lou's fault for not playing him. He's just not ready. And, you know, to me, like, okay, Seti Osman, that's, you know, kind of a cute story, but you know, how much is he really going to give you? And he's been playing enough. So to me, this is all a long, slow death march to the very top of the lottery, you know, whether or not they trade Love, whether or not he comes back, you know, in a timely manner from his injury or not. I don't think it matters. I mean, to me, they're on track to be a bottom three team in the league this season, basically no matter what.
Ty Lue got out, it sounds like, at the perfect time, so he doesn't have to deal with that. So good for him. I mean, he'll find another job, I'm sure. He's a championship-winning coach. He'll get at least another shot somewhere. And so we'll find out where the next opening is, because there's already been rumors going into the season and so far very early in the season of other seats getting warm in other cities like Minnesota, Washington, Oklahoma City. David, true or false, we will see another coach get fired this season?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think you look at those situations in particular, Washington and Oklahoma City, and I think the expectations for those teams were significantly higher than the record so far in the season. And while you expect that, at least for both teams, that they'll find a way to continue some kind of winning trend and perhaps even get into the playoffs, I think you could see the inverse happening, where maybe in Washington in particular, even if Dwight Howard comes back, and that could be something detrimental for the team. You know, as bad as they've been, adding Howard might make them even worse somehow. And I could see Scott Brooks absolutely being fired by that ownership group. You know, it's just he hasn't been able to get a reins on that franchise, on that team yet. He has that roster, which you think would be able to accomplish a great deal in the Eastern Conference, and they have not done so. With as much talent, with the two All-Stars there, with Dwight Howard, with Austin Rivers, et cetera, they've got a good enough team. You're paying Otto Porter all this money, and you're not getting as much production out of him. You could put a lot of that on Brooks's shoulder. I don't know that he's necessarily responsible. I don't know that there's another coaching candidate who can get the most of this roster. But I think you have enough owners now that are seeing the way things have worked out across the league and saying, you know, that they want to make a change. And the easiest change to make, unfortunately for Brooks, is probably to get fired.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately for Brooks, too, I talked with him when he was out here in Sacramento, and it sounds like he's saying and doing all the right things. Like the Wizards are taking more three-pointers. They're finally adapting to small ball. Scott Brooks, who famously like wouldn't take Kendrick Perkins out of the NBA Finals, now sounds like a small ball truther. Talks about the value of playing Jeff Green and Markieff Morris at center. But it's too little too late for him, and I just don't know that he can get a rein on that front office. I think or on that team. I wouldn't be surprised if Billy Donovan was out of a job here either. I think he hasn't been able to get a rein on Russell Westbrook, and I don't, it, just like with Brooks, I don't know if it's his fault that the Thunder are not very good. I think that there's a lot of blame to be laid at Russell Westbrook's feet. I'm just going to put this theory out there. I've been waiting to debut this theory. If you fire Donovan, and I'm not rooting for this to happen, I don't root for people to lose jobs, but if they do, don't you need a former point guard to really show Russell Westbrook the ways? Another kind of strong-minded, strong-willed figure to kind of bully Westbrook into playing a more efficient, more facilitator-happy version of basketball? Isn't Jason Kidd available somewhere in Phoenix, living on a ranch somewhere? Like, is that the next coach of Oklahoma City? I think it makes sense. That's all I'm saying. Ben, do you want to tell me I'm wrong?
That's nightmare fuel, man. Look, one of the best stories of this entire season has how the Milwaukee Bucks have so efficiently and effortlessly undone all the damage caused by Jason Kidd during his coaching tenure in Milwaukee. And what do you know? In seven games under Mike Budenholzer, they're 7-0. It's the franchise's first seven-game winning streak since 2002, right? So, no, I'm not rushing to bring Jason Kidd back by any means. And frankly, I don't even think Jason Kidd, a notoriously stubborn point guard, is capable of getting through to Russell Westbrook, a notoriously stubborn point guard. And I think I look at Donovan and Scott Brooks. I mean, they're both basically caddies. You know, they're like the guys who are golfing are Westbrook and Wall, and they're just kind of, you know, along for the ride in the golf cart, and that's their job. And if I was ownership, I would be very reluctant to fire either one of those guys, because I would know there's no coach who's going to change either one of these players at this point in their career. They're both making $30+ billion, basically locked up for what, $200 million in future money, each of them. Yeah, good luck getting through to those guys and fundamentally changing the way that they play. I don't see it. So, I mean, maybe somebody gets frustrated, one of those owners just decides enough is enough and does pull the trigger. But to me, I would be as patient as humanly possible in both those situations, because changing the coach is not going to change anything for Oklahoma City or Washington.
Just to be clear, I don't think it would be a good idea. I just think it's an idea that makes way too much sense and would definitely happen in the NBA, given how things go. Speaking of how things go in the NBA, Rick Pitino, who has been out of the NBA for a while, says he wants back into the NBA. He's looking for a job where he can develop players and be, quote, part of an organization, which is kind of part of the deal when you're a head coach. So I'll put this to you, Ben. True or false, Pitino would be a good hire for an NBA team somewhere?
Definitely false. I mean, it's funny, though, because isn't pace and space kind of what he was trying to do however many years ago? Like, wasn't he one of these guys who was like, let's shoot a lot of threes and play super fast? You know, like 2 decades before it became, you know, fashionable. I think the problem is, even though his style might be fairly modern with how the NBA plays, I think his personality is basically the anti-modern NBA coach. I mean, how many of the best coaches have gigantic egos. Like, how many of the, you know, the biggest NBA coaches would you consider to be egomaniacs? I mean, to me, there's not that many. I mean, yes, they're all confident. You know, Popovich, D'Antoni, Kerr, Brad Stevens, like all those guys have a very high internal sense of self-worth. But so much of being a quality NBA coach is, you know, giving your players all the credit, you know, just try to, you know, massage their egos and put them in positions to succeed rather than being, you know, the center of attention. And I just think after, you know, a pretty ugly end to his college tenure, and then, you know, you just look at what kind of mentalities fester in those college coaches when you're just the big man on campus making all this money with no real accountability. To me, I think that would be a recipe for disaster.
So, David, is the baggage going to be too much with Pitino? Do you think that it could kind of get swept under the rug? I mean, this is a guy who, I mean, look, you look at the players that came out of Louisville when he was in charge there. Donovan Mitchell was considered the best, the most NBA rookie who was actually a rookie, cough, not Ben Simmons. Like, is there any value in that? Would a team look at, like, hey, look, Donovan Mitchell was good. Montrezl Harrell's a pretty decent NBA player. Like, he's doing things for LA. I mean, if you want a guy who a coach that can develop players, he at least has a track record for that. Is that not going to be enough?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, implementing the 15 seconds or less offense isn't going to really work too well. Anyway, as far as I think the personality isn't going to work either. I mean, one of the reasons why he could be successful at the collegiate level is because he is this larger than life personality with this established track record there. And for kids that are 18 and 19 years old, maybe they'll defer to him. That's not going to work in the NBA, at the NBA level. I think what Ben was hinting at is absolutely correct, is that he just won't be able to get through to players and even being able to develop them. Whatever experience he was able to, you know, duplicate in Louisville isn't going to translate at the NBA level. And we've seen with Donovan, he was able to develop guys as well at the University of Florida, Al Horford, you know, Joakim Noah, et cetera. And that's not necessarily led to NBA success. So I don't think that I think the days of being able to go, or maybe in specific cases and say a Brad Stevens, maybe that might work. But I think Stevens is a different altogether type of coach than Pitino or Donovan is ever going to be. Mm-hmm. And so I just don't see that Pitino can go in there with his record, with his personality, with all that baggage, and that a team is willing to take a chance and pay him probably an exorbitant amount of money in order to bring that name there. I just don't see any allure of adding Pitino to your team as far as being able to attract players or you know, fans to the seats.
Yeah, Brad Stevens, I think, is the exception, not the rule. We just see time and time again in every sport, college coaches don't necessarily translate well to the professional version of their sport. I mean, Nick Saban, most overrated coach of all time. Just had to throw that in there. Sure. That's what happens when you ditch the Dolphins the way you did. We're debuting a new segment today called Serial or Not Serial. This is actually a segment that David and I used to do on our old Miami Heat podcast before joining Locked On, David. I don't know if we ever did it with Locked On. But we're bringing it back with some tweaks for Locked On NBA. It's a pretty simple segment. We'll go through the games tonight, and we'll decide if the game is serial or not cereal. In other words, is the game something that you want to sit down and watch with a bowl of cereal or not? Let's start with Heat at Hornets, the early game. I've got cereal. David, what do you have?
Cereal.
Ben.
You guys are going to have to convince me. I'm saying no cereal. What's so exciting about your Miami Heat these days? I mean, it's been a pretty uneven start, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
To me, it's more Kemba Walker with the Hornets. I'm enjoying watching Kemba Walker pull up from three-point range, and I'm loving his new confidence.
Yeah, Dinosaur Damian Lillard, it's fine. I'm not trying to make fun of them. I think that they've been kind of shaky. They've had a couple of nights where they've just been unbelievable, and Kemba has been absolutely super consistent and looking like, you know, one of the best, you know, starts of the season of anybody. But he still does not have enough help, even with the new, you know, Borrego-style offense that they've been kind of trying to implement, where they're must-see TV for me.
Not even MKG at center? That's not enough to lure you to watch Miami at Charlotte?
Well, I do love that idea, but, you know, it makes for better podcast fodder than it does for watching on television. Like, it's more fun to talk about in theory than to really sit through and practice.
The other part of the reason that it's serial is because there's only 3 7 o'clock games, Heat at Hornets, and then the next two that we're going to talk about, Hawks at Cavaliers, Kings at Magic. I have both of those at not serial. I'm going to watch a half hour of one of these games, and so I've got it at Heat at Hornets. Hawks at Cavaliers, I've got not serial. Ben?
I'm going to make the case that King's Magic should get your half an hour of attention. Mm. Number one, you've already got the scars from last night. So that's, you understand that they're good. But I'm still trying to figure out how legit are these Kings, because I spent the entire, 2 months leading into the season just bagging on these guys. You know, this is going to be the worst team in the Western Conference. Yeah. Vlade's terrible and on and on and on. And I mean, this is almost like a summer league game. I mean, how many lottery picks do you have between these two rosters? You know, you're probably like, what, 8, 9? So from that standpoint, if you're looking for just, raw craziness and zaniness, that's why I'm tuning in.
Shout out Ben McLemore, the forgotten lottery pick on the Kings.
Great point. Could be 10.
It could be 10 now. I've got this as not surreal, but I got that game not surreal, but in between bites, might tune in, just trying to really expand the surreal metaphor to its greatest limits. I'm still intrigued by the Magic's length, Mo Bamba, Jonathan Isaac. Love watching what they could do in the front court. David, Pistons at Celtics, surreal or not surreal?
That seems decidedly unsurreal to me. Like, I feel like, even though Boston is a fun team and everything else, and Detroit's having the success with Blake Griffin, just watching that team probably is going to be, watching this game is going to be a little slowed down affair. I just don't see it as being as entertaining, even though it has the star power and the big name allure. I'm just not going to be watching it with much interest. So I'm going to say not serial.
Ben, please disagree.
I could try to make the case just based on, figuring out what's up with Boston. Can they finally get right here or start to put the pieces back together a little bit? But, to me, I think there's a better game in the same time slot featuring Eastern Conference teams. It'd be Philly and Toronto.
I can't believe what I'm hearing. Nobody's going to be watching Pistons Celtics. I mean, I guess if we're comparing it to 76ers at Raptors, but that game's on NBA TV, so you can have that on the TV, whip out your laptop, second screen experience, put up League Pass, and watch Pistons Celtics. Blake Griffin is playing amazing basketball. He had one bad game a couple of nights ago. But other than that, I'm all in. I want to see if the Celtics will right the ship here on offense. That game is totally serial. 76ers at Raptors, obviously serial. A little bit less serial, maybe a little bit less milk now because Kawhi, but depending on what happens with Kawhi, but he should be back. It does seem like he was just resting. Like, that was just a rest game. In that game, he didn't play against the Bucks. Maybe the Bucks and the Raptors are both sort of holding their cards close to their vest there. But 76ers at Raptors, David, serial for you as well?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, Kawhi is supposed to play. I guess they were just doing the back-to-back resting thing, and he hasn't played on the road yet, so maybe he's only playing home games this year. But I think the one advantage of getting blown out by Milwaukee is that, you didn't have to run your guys crazy minutes there, so hopefully they'll be fairly fresh, because this is a potential playoff matchup, right? I mean, couldn't you see this as like a second-round tilt?
Yeah.
Especially if the Celtics don't get their offense going, which is another reason why to watch that Pistons game. We got three more 8 o'clock games, Trailblazers at Rockets. I've got this at not serial. I have no interest in watching the Rockets, especially without James Harden. And the Trailblazers, I've seen this movie for the last 3 years. It's just been on repeat. I know exactly what to expect when I watch the Trailblazers. Jake Layman's added an interesting wrinkle, sort of. I don't know. I'm grasping for straws when it comes to Portland. But I've got this at not serial. Does anybody disagree with me?
No, I've got it at serial. I want to see Dime Store Kemba Walker over in Portland, see what he can do. I'm curious to see if he can put up any points there against Chris Paul. That's always a fun matchup. I'm curious to see how it works out.
I've got not serial, but look, Zach Collins' family wants their attention too. Okay, they're going to be tuning in because they like how this opening season has gone for them, and they're ready to start pushing for starting minutes and all that stuff too. But again, I've got a better game in the same time slot. I think it's Washington, Memphis. I know that sounds a little bit weird, but look, if you're going to go for a train wreck, go for the complete train wreck. And yes. I think Houston's only like a half a train wreck right now. I just saw Washington play the Clippers and just get absolutely run off the court and then just kind of melt down in their post-game comments, where Bradley Beal's hiding from the media and Austin Rivers is just like, taking shots at literally everyone, even though he's only been there for like a week and a half. So they could lose any game on any given night at this point. And if you lose to Memphis, that would qualify under any game on any given night. And then let's just stay tuned post game and see who takes shots at who. I just can't wait to see this this meltdown continue.
David, you have this as serial too?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I just wrote about Jaren Jackson Jr. today. He's fun to watch. And of course, the train wreck factor on Washington's side is always interesting. So definitely serial as far as
I can. I disagree, I think, on every single one. This is not cereal. This is not pancakes. This is not toast. This is not any breakfast item whatsoever. I don't want to watch this at all. I mean, this seems like a drama to read about later, like afterwards, like understanding.
That's what makes it serial.
I don't know if I want to watch it. The Grizzlies aren't fun to watch. The Wizards, I just watched them. That was tragic. I'm watching Clippers at Thunder. That's the one I'm watching. I think the Clippers have been interesting. I like what Doc Rivers is like a head coaching fever dream for him this year. Not having to go through any superstar. He's just picking one of 15 guys or 5 of 15 guys and running them out on the court and kind of just doing stuff. Montrezl Harrell is scoring 30 points now. I just think things are interesting. And speaking of a train wreck, the Thunder, ultimate body language train wreck. I want to see everybody stand around and watch Russell Westbrook pound the existence of that team into the ground and just Billy Donovan, like, just, you know, run his fingers through his greased up hair, just being like, this could be the last time I ever have to coach this team. Thank God. So I'm all in on watching Clippers Thunder.
That was well said. I have one unrelated question. At what point will Jaren Jackson Jr. be good enough to be just referred to as Jaren? Because Jaren Jackson Jr. is such a mouthful, and J3 or 3J or Trey J, all these have been thrown out as possible nicknames for him. But I'm hoping that he will be good enough that we can just call him Jaren. Isn't that the way to play this?
I think it's J-Cube. J-Cube.
Right? Oh, okay.
Just made that up.
Keep workshopping it. I like where you're going.
That's what we'll talk about next week then, because that's all we have for today. You can subscribe to Locked On NBA on iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. We'll be back here next Tuesday. Thank you for listening.